Welcome to The Truth in This Art. I am your host, Rob Lee. Thank you for tuning in to my conversations at the intersection of arts, culture, and community. Today, I am thrilled to welcome my next guest, who's a visionary, having navigated the globe with a paintbrush in hand, transforming memories and culture into breathtaking visual narratives. Born in the vibrant city of Lagos and having honed his skills at the prestigious Royal College of Art in London, our guest merges the personal with the universal in every stroke. His unique approach to concealing faces in his artwork invites viewers into a dialogue with the unseen, challenging us to see beyond the surface. Please welcome Osaritin Ugiabe. I'm going to do this slightly different and give the guests the space and the opportunity to introduce themselves. So if you will, you know, I'm getting building up all of the excitement, all of the sort of like unveiling the curtain. Could you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Osaritin Ugiabe. Nigerian born, also American, which a lot of people don't even actually know this. But I like to keep things ambiguous, you know, for that reason. So I did move to New York when I was 16. Yeah. My parents, or my dad first immigrated, you know, to New York City in 1996. So I was 10 at the time. And like 6 years later, we joined them. So it was myself, my mother, and five kids. So we all moved to the Bronx, yes. So I'm the eldest. I mean, this is the most candid I've given. You know, usually I don't give access to my personal life, but I think it's not wrong with, you know, setting the record straight sometimes, you know, just hearing from the horse's mouth. So we did move to the Bronx, and at 16, I was out of high school. So the initial plan was to repeat high school so that way I could get into a better college, but somehow we skipped that and I went straight to a community college. So
so, you know, coming from you, so you said you're Nigerian?
Yes, I am Nigerian, actually. Yes.
And then to the Bronx,
there you go.
So, you know, that's a different situation. So let's talk a little bit about some of those like early years and those formative years as it relates to like, what was it like growing up from the sort of like our artistic bent? And I say that because a lot of times it's these sort of touch points early on where you might see something creative, you know, like New York obviously has a lot of different stuff there, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different people coming together, street art, things of that nature, museums. So is there anything that, you know, growing up that, or even coming from your family growing up, that you're like, all right, that's one of those earliest points where I just recognized something creative, something art that shows up in what you're doing these days?
To be honest, there was no artistic intention, to be honest, from the very beginning. As a kid, I loved computers so much. Yes, you know, you know, I was one of the first kids to have a CPU in Lagos at this time. And I remember, you know, downloading a bunch of games because I was really into games at this time. So I thought I would, you know, when I moved to America, that I would just pursue computer science, something like this. So to answer your question, I had no intention of being an artist, you know. You know, my sister would go, oh, you know, you did something, you know, when we were kids and something like this. And I go, no way. I don't remember doing anything at all. No intention. And it's quite embarrassing that this, you know, for me to say this, because, you know, I wasn't even sure Pablo Picasso was. That's how ignorant I was when it comes to the arts, yeah. You know. But it all changed when I did move to New York in the Bronx. I had to take painting as an elective. Mm-hmm. You know, with this guy, this professor, his name is Ian Charles Scott. He's a Scottish professor, you know. So I remember clearly, actually, quite vividly thinking of my initial reaction when I was in his class, when I got into his class. And I said, what's this? You know, he goes, it's painting. So that's literally how I kind of like, you know, find myself into this realm of being a creative, you know.
So And I'm definitely going to be asking this later, because you've already, as I was telling you before we got started, I'm going to be writing these rapid fire questions. You've got three new ones, my man. So be prepared for those. But well, not prepared because they were just out of the blue. But so give the listeners who might not be dipped, might not be aware of, you know, what your art is about, what your work is about, sort of the themes that you're pursuing within your work.
That's a great question, because I think a lot of times autobiographical. Mm. You know, I'm in Baltimore at the moment. You know, I've lived in major cities. You know, but I remember being in the Bronx and having to think about art. And for me, it was a necessity. Mm. You know, being a teenager in the Bronx. Arts, literally, you know, it's a bit of a cliche now when you hear people say these things, how, you know, arts, or maybe it's music or something like this, save them. Yeah. It did get me out of trouble, you know. Ian, you know, this professor became a mentor of mine. And then I made friends with a few artists. I mean, these are quote unquote artists because they did go to art school. I didn't, you know, I was in this community college. I was in for, I think, if I'm not mistaken, computer information system or something like this, or information technology. I think that's what it's called back then. It's a community college, very small. Sure. You know, but I was surrounded by artists, like friends who were literally going to really good art schools, you know. But for me, it was a necessity. When things were tough, when things were hard, personally, you know, painting was literally what I had, you know. So I was able to really put a lot of the, you know, the demons, I guess, if one could say, on canvas. Yeah. So it was really a necessity. It was nothing really. It was no luxury at all of just saying, "Hey, there's a guy who wants to express himself," you know. And I think if you look at the work, sometimes you could see that, you know.
That. You touched on one of those things that definitely I relate to from in doing this and doing this as long. We're around the same age, so yes. We have these different things that present themselves, and the keeping you out of trouble or being able to your whatever your creative pursuit is, you with your work, me with doing this, and I joke about it, it's like this is my most stable relationship in doing this for 15 years or what have you, and you know I've done different types of podcasts and. You know, one that I did that no longer is around, but I may go back to it. My brother's like one of my bigger fans of it. He listens to it and it's almost like a journal in some ways or a diary. And he's like, yo, you were real, real spicy on that one. You were really funny on that one, or you were really trying to process something and almost going back. And it, I don't know, it just, you can see those different stages during the maturation of being someone that started at 24. So
yes,
being an idiot at 24 to like an idiot at 39, I guess, but yes. Going through that whole matriculation and doing it in a way that's creative. It's not, you know, just getting on and just musing, but really getting on, putting the mic on. It's like, what am I thinking about today? What do I want to, you know, I do a movie review podcast. So even that, what am I revisiting with this context being an adult now versus yes. someone that's a young adult? Yes. So having that timestamp and having the work kind of like progress and, you know, and with the hope of getting better or being more interesting or having these different types of dialogues with that time, it's really interesting.
Yes, indeed.
So I see in this background of yours, in this lovely background of yours, Royal College of Art. So talk a bit about that period and, you know, sort of this, you know, further development, because you touch on the Bronx, you touch on, you had this this one instructor. So talk about that period and kind of like, because even the computer science thing is still blowing my mind a little bit. I'm looking on the site and I'm like, how do those things go together?
Right, exactly. You know, yeah. So... I mean, the story is—it's quite. I'm not sure if I could say it's linear, you know, but it seems to actually go around. So I came out of, you know, Holstos Community College, and I went to Long Island University, to actually pursue computer science, you know, but I've taken enough art, you know, classes with Ian. When I say enough, I mean just two classes with him. You know, he's a magic realist. You know, if you look at my work, there's nothing realistic about, you know, I mean, I guess technically you could, you know, what's a realist, you know, but that's getting too technical. But if you look at my work, it's not magic realist, meaning I actually didn't take after Ian. You know, I sort of found my own way, found my own voice, you know, how I express myself. So yeah. When I got to Long Island University, I remember really feeling passionate because I've had a bit of experience, you know, with Ian, and I wanted to take more classes. So, you know, so I signed up for another painting class, you know, and the instructor, if I remember correctly, was Song Lee. Was this Korean professor, you know, and he was more like, you know, he was like, call me, I remember vividly, he said, call me Song, because Lee is too popular. It's every, I mean, according to him, he would say, lots of Koreans are just known to be Lee, so call me Song, you know, and, but he did, I took a class with him, he did encourage, you know, my pursuing art, you know, he would, you know, I remember I made a painting in his class, and he goes, wow, you know, he said to me, it's obvious that you seem to be into this stuff, into painting, you know, but it's also obvious that you don't know a lot about painting. So his recommendation, I remember then, was for me to look up a ton of artists. And I remember, and he also got me, he introduced me to the Armory show. This is a show of international artists that happens, I think, if not every year, I think it's every year. And he said, just get yourself reacquainted with some of the best artists. So that's exactly what I did in his class, you know. Then I got out of there, and, you know, then I hit the real world. You know, so I left Long Island, very fancy school, you know, private, quiet and green and lush. And I left that environment. I went right back to the Bronx, you know. And this was in 2008. Sorry, this was in 2009. So I came out of, I graduated from Long Island in 2009. And if you remember, correctly, it was during the, what you call it? It was during the recession.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was back in the South Bronx. You know, I remember I volunteered myself into a hospital thinking, you know, if I could get a job or something like this, you know, but I still painted. I returned back to Ian because where I worked and where I was volunteering was literally close to the community college I attended. So I would volunteer and went back to Ian's class and assisted Ian in his class, you know, with his students. And that way, in return, he gave me like a little room at the back of the studio to just go there and just paint. So I would use leftover canvases to just really just express myself, yeah. You know. And then Ian would also take me to Chelsea and just a ton of just looking, going into Manhattan, you know, we went everywhere. Any museum you could think of, gallery you could think of, you know, we went there. You know, I was just really learning about, you know, the genres and the different kind of artists, the one I'm into, the one I'm not into, you know, just complete immersion, you know, of myself into the art world. So, and but even with all this, I wasn't really thinking of really pursuing this, to be honest. You know, I just kept thinking, how would I survive? You know, how would I? I've just gone out of college. You know, I'm supposed to be this computer scientist, you know, and supposed to be making the big bucks, but none of this was happening. So I was actually, in reality, I was volunteering in the South Bronx, you know, and trying to find my way into, you know, into making something substantial for myself, you know. And then Ian, you know, would tell me if I truly want to do this, I may have to go back to art school or try to apply to art school. And I didn't take him seriously, you know. So I, on this trajectory to just a normal life, I had a girlfriend at the time, and it was, you know, get married and just the regular life, you know. And when that fell through, you know, I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, You know, what am I going to do now? You know, and prior to that falling through, I did apply to Yale. You know, and the reason I applied to Yale at the time, it was due to a Richard Serra interview. I remember watching Charlie Rose, and he interviewed this artist called Richard Serra. He's a sculptor. He just died, actually, I'm not mis I think last week. So, you know, yeah, so unfortunate. And during this interview, Serra had a literature undergrad. You know, he said to Charlie Rose that he just applied, he sent a few drawings to Yale, and somehow got in with a few drawings, and his undergrad is literature. So I'm thinking, this is not painting, really. You know, this is quite different. You know, and I said, so it's possible then that I could do the same. Trust me. You know, when you're completely ignorant, you can do anything, right? Because no one's stopping you. You know, so what I did is I copied him literally. So I applied to just one school. It was Yale. So I did the Yale or bust thing. So I sent in a few head drawings this time around. It was small heads, nothing exaggerated at all. It was tiny, 16 by 20 inches heads. You know, I sent a bunch of them to Yale. Could you believe it? Yale said yes. I think it's funny because I was just looking at the email now, this year. I was looking back at, you know, how far I've come. And I looked at acceptance. It was like, yeah, come down. Come down, you know. And then I got to New Haven. I remember it was actually me and an ex-girlfriend. And I got there and I brought out the paintings, like put them on a wall. And the instructors, I remember they looked at it and they looked at me. They looked at it. They looked at me. They go, did you make this? And I go, yes. And it was weird because I could see a part of them not believing that I would make a work like this or whatever the case may be. There's a bit of a, they were quite skeptical. And then the next question was like, next thing they asked me was, so tell me about Nigeria. And I remember being, I'm not gonna lie, I was pissed off. I go, these are a bunch of heads. I mean, if you could find Nigerian, then wonderful. You tell me about Nigeria. That was sort of my attitude, you know, because they were heads, you know. It's I am Nigerian already at this point, and I think I need to get this clear. You know, in America, there seems to be this idea that if one doesn't want to go that route, it's like you're denying something. You know, I mean, the Nigerian part of me is there. You know,
Absolutely.
I cannot make much of emphasis on that enough. You know, I can't make enough of it. It's there. You know, but what the work is what the work is. I mean, these heads that I sent, you know, they were quite strong, you know. I made them at a very dark time. So I was just a little bit disappointed that I wasn't being asked about the work itself, but it was more about what seemed interesting to these interviewers.
It's one of these things where and I see that in doing this, and I see that in, you know, some of the folks that I have on, a lot of the folks that look like you and I that I have
Yes.
on, of how can we be packaged in a certain way
Yes.
to achieve a certain goal. And you know, I've heard many things. Like, I'm from Baltimore, I'm a Baltimore guy, East Coast guy, and
Yes.
you know, black guy, all of the things.
Yes.
And it's just like, yeah, I don't know if this is a black enough, or you don't look like a podcaster, or you don't sound like you're from Baltimore. It's like, what does any of that mean?
Mean
And
exactly.
then it's this notion of folks that are supposed to be representative of sort of what that looks like. Oh,
Yes.
this is African art, this is black art, this is that. And I'm like, who's choosing that though? Who's
Yes.
making that decision?
Yes, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, if that's what the artist is about, then fine. But it's one thing to have an artist show you something and for you to just completely disregard it and impose a view on them. I just thought it was quite uncalled for, you know. So anyway, I didn't get a place, I'll put it that way. You know, and so I left. I remember, you know, so I left New Haven. So in my mind, I remember thinking, I mean, if I got an interview on a first try in just one school, it means I must be doing something. So screw art school. I'm gonna go back to my regular, this was, before I actually, before my relationship fizzled out with this ex-girlfriend of mine. So I just remember saying to myself, I'm just gonna go back to my regular life, go back to my job, just do the art on the side as I've somehow managed to be able to do. Until life happened again, and this time around, I mean, I feel like I'm going back and forth as far as timeline. So the relationship, came to an end, and that's when I just decided to just fully go for what I wanted to do, which is art. So I wasn't as arrogant as I was initially of just applying to one school. So I applied to a bunch this time around. So I applied to four schools. So I got into two. Yale did not accept me this time around.
They're like,
I got
you're
into
a pass on
Parsons. Exactly. So I got into Parsons, the new school, which is in New York, and I go into Royal College. The Royal College, I had no idea what that school was about. Nothing. And this is the first time I'm actually talking about this. I had no idea what the school was about. Ian, I mean, this Scottish dude didn't even say much about it, but he did say, I mean, could you imagine you going to Royal College? But then I looked it up, and it happened to be that as an American, you're given access, it's one of the school accepted by the federal government, actually, which I don't think a lot of Americans are aware of this. So it would just be like going to another American school. So I applied. And then I remember it so vividly. I had a friend, I don't know if I could mention his name, but he did apply. He did apply to Yale. And during this time, a bunch of us was applying to school. No one was telling me, no one was, and I just hung up with this dude. He didn't tell me anything at all about. So until I think it was an Instagram message, no, sorry, a Facebook message that he got accepted. And I saw my result. I was like, oh, I didn't get accepted. And he was going to yell. I was like, oh my God, this dude just stole my dream. And for me, at this during this time, I'm 31. So it was a do or die. It's either now or never. So anyway, come March, I got the news. I remember going into my office. Because I worked for the city of New York, and in the South Bronx, and I logged in. That's sort of my routine. You're not supposed to do this, but I did anyway. You log into your personal email, and I remember seeing that. I remember seeing the result that I got into Parsons. Nice. I was like, oh my God! It was like, what happened? My colleagues were like, I was like, oh man, I think I just got into art school or something like this. And they were like, oh my, yes, we know, this is not a place for you, because in this office, actually, at this time I was making photograph. So I used to photograph my colleagues in the office. Whenever we have this Friday get together, I'll make photographs. I'll photograph the whole department, and then I'll put the pictures on the wall. So everyone's always, people, they've been saying, oh my God, great photographer, right? Great artist and blah, blah, blah. And the moment, I got this notice that I've gone into art school, like, we knew it, you don't belong here, we knew it. And I said, hey guys, but I'm just waiting for one. I like this offer, but maybe it would be a lot more exciting if I could get the one in London. I didn't say it out loud, but I just remember saying in my head, I'm just waiting for one. So and this was March 15th, this 15th of March, and the 16th of my birthday. So I got the news on the 15th that I got into the new school. So the next day was a Friday, and I remember this so vividly. It was the 16th, it was my birthday. Same thing happened. Came into the office, logged in, and boom. I got into Royal College and I screamed in the office. It was like, oh my God, what happened now? I was like, I got into Royal College. And again, I don't know anything about this school. I just like the idea because I've been in a funk, to be honest. I've just broken up. I'm really down, thinking that this is a last minute. Even as a plan B, I've booked a flight to Nigeria. Because I've gotten really heavily into photography during this time. I said, you know what, if any of the schools, if I don't get in, I'll just go to Nigeria, make photographs that I've always wanted to make about something that has to do with how I grew up. and sort of connect them to the Bronx, you know. So that was my plan B. So, you know, come Friday, here I am getting the news that I've got into Royal College in London. And I was like, oh my God. The next day, I'm literally on a plane with my dad, and we headed to Nigeria, to Lagos. You know, I was like, and in the Royal College, you know, unlike Parsons, who's like, we are going to give you a ton of, you know, money and scholarship, but we've got connections to the Whitney Museum and this and this. The Royal College were like, here's a conditional offer. You've got 2 weeks.
Do you accept?
I was like, conditional, like you've got 2 weeks to, like, you know, make a deposit and all these things, and I'm gonna be in Nigeria. So I was freaking out, you know. So I traveled, you know, it was Nigeria literally next day, was on a Saturday, we were on a plane, you know, and the whole time I was in Lagos, that mixture of excitement and fear, you know. So I really got down into what I came to Nigeria for, just to make these photographs. So I really got into it, but also thinking, how am I going to come up with $2,000 and pay this deposit? Because the Royal College is telling me, you know, this is not a complete guarantee. So I sort of, you know, the whole time I was in Nigeria, that whole energy, I was able to put it into making a body of work that touched on how I grew up. You know, in Lagos, you know, I've always wanted to make images that I could sort of show my American friends, because the work I do are quite personal. I mean, the people I'm usually thinking about are my friends. You know, I seriously take friendship. I consider friendship a very serious part of my practice of who I am. You know, so I remember thinking about my friends in the Bronx at the time and folks I grew up with in Nigeria, and wanted to show them what it was like, that fine line of being in America, but also it's not heaven, you know, because it's hot, you know. There's this theory that you are, you know, it's everything is there. So anyway, as I made the photograph, I came back to New York. I was able to make the deposit, you know, get that through. And then at this time, I was with the Bronx Documentary Center. We hang out. You know, I was hanging out there a whole lot. You know, we formed a collective, you know, the Bronx Photo League, you know, a bunch of photographers in the Bronx. You know, there's so much going on. I came back and I was just looking at these images I made of Nigeria, and the founder of the Bronx Documentary Center saw me looking at them. You know, and that's sort of how he, I know I'm like, it's a long winding story, and that's sort of how, you know, he looked at the photographs and go, oh my God, you just made this. I said, yes. It's like, come in, you know, I wouldn't mind showing this, you know. And I said to myself, I said, are you serious? It's like, yeah. So we connected those images with something I've done early on in the Bronx. So we just kind of juxtaposed them and it blew up, you know. So everything was happening at the same time. Here I am, supposedly just got into two art schools. And then there's this photograph that I've gone and made, that's, you know, that now we're having a show. We're having a show with. And you know, and it blew up, you know, the whole of New York City, you know, a major publication picked it up, the New York Times, Financial Times. I was like, the Financial Times, what's the Financial Times? You know, and it was, you know, through the help of the Bronx Documentary Center, you know. And here's this show, really massive. And also, at the same time, I'm thinking, it's put the spotlight on me. Same time, I'm thinking, how am I going to get myself to London now? So that happened, but it was a super success, you know. The photography project, you know, was widely published, you know. And I came back to Baltimore. Then I came to Baltimore to see my sisters. They came here for college. I said, look, I'll be leaving for London. I made photographs here also of Baltimore. Just so weird how all the things were happening all at the same time. You know, I spent a good solid 3 days making photographs here in Baltimore. Came back to New York, and off I went, you know, to London. You know, so yeah, that's sort of how I, you know, you can see how I've made my way to London. So yeah.
No, that's great. And here's the thing, we'll have you talking about the winding nature of it, right? And you know, one comment I want to make, and then one thing I'll say, you kind of knocked out two other questions that I had, and what you're making my job easier. So
Oh,
appreciate
good.
that. And then the other thing, going back to one of the things you said, and I definitely want to dive into sort of current work and things of that sort, but this notion of friendship, that's the thing that really, so, you know, I'm a movie guy, I'm a nerd, I'm a movie nerd, and I watch a lot of television as well. And everything I say is almost a pop culture reference. And, you know, started watching a show years back, Hannibal, that based on the whole Silence of the Lambs thing, right?
Yes.
And there's a quote in it that Hannibal says to Will Graham, and he says, friendship is a rare gift. And that's a thing that stuck with me. Yes. And it's something that I find that is so rare, is so precious, is to be taken serious. And I don't know, I've always thought that, but in hearing it in that context and watching it in something I'm not expecting it in, and I'm like, oh, no. There are some people that's like, oh, yeah, we're friends. It's like, I don't know if we are.
Or exactly, yeah.
There are other folks that's like, man, you know, we might be able to be friends one day. You know, it's not, you know, I just don't drop, you know, the,
yes, yes. The
friendship draws like that, you know?
Yes. No, yeah. Because I mean, the reason I actually make that reference is because I've had to terminate a ton of, you know, quote unquote friendship. And I hate to say it, it really hurts, you know, you know, and because I'm saying all of this to say, there's a sort of assumption that's made when people think you've sort of crossed over, or they think you've made it. Because I remember actually your first question was something of you know, if I recall correctly, it was like, so what is it like to have made it or crossed or something like this? And I go, made what? You know, I remember having this, you know, telling my girlfriend about that, and she goes, isn't it funny how people think that's exactly, I mean, what's success, right? You know, because you may be right that, you know, it's the fact that I'm able to, you know, just make the work, right? Have it be almost a full-time thing. Maybe that is success, right? Or maybe it's the fact that I've been able to show, you know, have shows in some spaces that's made me, you know, quote unquote successful, you know, but to me, I'm just still this guy, you know, who's still trying to figure it out, you know, who's still sort of finding new ways to tell or to make work or to put a certain feelings forth, right? You know, so it's, again, you know, it's that sort of thing where you, it's a balancing act, you know. Same can say with friendship, right? It's like with some of my friends, I noticed the moment I left the Bronx and I was in London, and everything just sort of, there's lots of assumption, like, oh, you know, oh, and I mean, the typical things that come with perceived success, you know, it almost feels like no one gets to check on you now because you're you know, it's like, because the assumption is, oh, you're fine and you've made it. And I'm not going to lie, it did piss me off for a long time. I was, even during my time in London, I was in a very dark place. The work I did in London, we were all dark. You know, colors went out of the work. There was nothing colorful, really. You know, because I think deep down, there was a part of me that was trying to reconcile that feeling, you know, of, you know, sort of isolated, but also having to put up this front that I'm fine. I mean, how else would I, you know, survive in a foreign land, you know? So there was a lot of that, and the work sort of got darker, you know, and I had to really, really reconcile that feeling, you know, also with my audience, in a sense, you know, with what you're seeing, like, people did notice the work change. So, yeah. So friendship, for sure, was a key to that, you know, because I lost a lot of friends, you know, during that time, you know, and it's now I'm actually making new, you know, sort of making new people, you know, but it's a lot more difficult now, you know, so yeah.
I'll share this with you. I don't know if you watch a lot of movies or whatever, what have you, but again, it's a movie thing. I watched Marvel movies, right? And, you know, friends that I've had for a long time in doing this, as this podcast has ascended and has taken, you know, whatever effort and time and energy, you know, I've lost like three major friends. I'm talking about decades worth of like friendship.
Yes.
Almost in succession.
Yes.
And I start to re-identify what do I value in it. And I'm like, because my thing is, I don't know if you do this, but my thing is, oh, it's me. Let me, and then I'll assess that. And then when I realize, like, nah, I don't know if it was. And then it's just like, but it's presented like I'm the jerk, or even in this, like, since you're I'll be transparent in the same way where, you know, I do this. And it's definitely a community focus. And it's definitely, it's like having folks share their story authentically. Yes. How they want to share it.
Yes.
And a lot of times that love doesn't feel like it's there. I'm not looking for the big ducats. I'll share this with you. When you got that notice, like on your, the day before your birthday, then on your birthday about the acceptance,
the
funding that I got for this season, I got on my birthday this year.
Look at that.
And I was just like, look at that. We got it.
Yeah.
But it's still that sort of feeling of not necessarily feeling ostracized, but not feeling I'm taking serious. And I did a period recently. It's just wrapping of I'm going to be a recluse. The thing that I'm doing is community related work. And I'm extracting myself out of the community because it was too many weird things happening.
Yes.
And it's just like presenting friendship. Oh, that's not really friendship.
Cool. That's exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to do something else.
Yes. No, it's really, you know, I could see how, you know, how it could get really dark, right? You know, because I, even to this day, I do have a conversation with my girlfriend and we talk about, and I'm always trying to reevaluate, you know, my stance. Like, is it me? It's got to be me. You know, am I the jerk? You know, similar to exactly what you just said, you know, is it me? What's going on? You know, and then having to come to the conclusion that maybe it's not me. I don't know. You know, but it's a very isolating place to be, you know, and how does one go about, you know, because what I learned was even the more you try to be a lot more relatable, it just seemed like you are, what's the word? Sort of feels like you are playing on people's, you know, intelligence, something like this. You know, it feels like, you know, how dare you, you know, humble brag or, you know, that sort of thing.
It's a mix of a few different things that I think happens. It's almost a people pleasing thing. It is sort of the, well, let me give them what I think they want. And because you're doing that, you're not being authentic.
Exactly.
And folks can see that. And
yes,
you know, since you're based in Baltimore now, right? So you're probably seeing that same sort of vibe here. And I would imagine the same thing in some of these cities and these communities, that the moment when something feels inauthentic, people don't jam with it.
No, 100%. You know, and I get that, you know, because I remember being in the Bronx, and one time the Bronx was just this hotspot and we were so protective, you know, of it. And I get it, you know, and I've had enough life experience to see through that. Even to the point where, you know, even I, you know, I've been in Baltimore since 2020, since coming back from literally from the UK. Even it's still hard for me to actually say anything about Baltimore, right? Because obviously there's a part of me that's very self-aware that, you know, I've got to give it a lot more time. You know, I can't just come into a new space. And, you know, and I did, you know, and again, it's where it gets really complicated, because I did remember coming in with open arms of just trying to meet people and make friends. And like you said, you know, and also, you know, it all ties to my personality and my experience actually in America, of this feeling of this perception that I am inauthentic because I don't seem to fit the mold. And I get it, you know, and I know. Even sometimes I say to myself, I couldn't imagine telling someone who just met me how I'm this, and all of a sudden I'm here and I'm there and I'm this and I'm this and I got this and I sound this way. I don't sound that way. And I'm into this hardcore hip hop head, but I don't necessarily use hip hop, you know, words or slangs, and how would someone believe a person like this, you know? So I'm aware of it, but but also, you know, it's sort of I'm saying all this because it sort of ties into the work, right? You know, and there's a lot of self-reflection that happens when you realize that maybe these folks that are telling you what is interesting, what you go for, maybe they do have something to say. Because it was quite ironic that being rejected from Yale, who talked about, who asked me about Nigeria, and a few years later, the work that kind of blew up, you know, with the New York Times and with the Bronx Document Center, was this work that sort of had to do with my going back to Nigeria, right? And connecting it to the Bronx. So it was like, so in a weird way, it was sort of right. Like, this is what's interesting, right? You know, it took me a while to realize, that's odd. You know, even I'm a rebel, you know, just naturally. If you tell me something that I should do, oh no, you know, there's a huge chance I won't do that exact thing just for the sake of not confining, you know. Even with the photography, at one point, I used to make photographs without looking through the camera. And the moment the New York Times or the Financial Times mentioned something about, oh, the photographer does not look through the viewfinder, you know, immediately I saw that printed out, I started looking through the viewfinder. So I actually made it to the point where you find me looking through a viewfinder.
Right.
And so in images, you know. So there's a bit of that duality of who I am, you know, where do I fit, you know. Even being in America, a lot of times people think I may have acquired this accent from like going to London or something like this. But no, not really. You know, in the South Bronx, I remember folks would think I was visiting, you know. You know, it's like, and I remember I used to go, oh, geez, you know, and I'm in the South Bronx with a camera, you know, at late night, you know, in this horrible part of town, and you still think I'm visiting, you know. And then I have my friends who I, you know, grew up with who obviously knew I'm from the Bronx, you know, often, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a native, you know, but obviously knew that this is my city and knew my history with the city, you know, even from community college to working. So, you know, even when I had a life-threatening, you know, illness to being, you know, taken care of in the same hospital I ended up working for, you know, I mean, I'm talking about deep-rooted history here now in this part of New York City, you know, it's always been this thing where it's a bit of suspicion, you know, as to who's this guy.
It's one of the things you touched on earlier. I'll paraphrase, I think, where it's like, you know, keep almost being vague, not being as like out there because it has a benefit in that anonymity. And, you know, in sort of this, like when I do interviews in other cities, they're like, you're from here, right, bro? It's like, I am not. I am from Baltimore. But it's the thing of being able in some ways to be a chameleon, I suppose, but, you know, having a diverse array of interests and
yes, being
to have those different conversations. So like, I'll talk to folks who are from media companies, like in LA, they're like, yeah, you're from there, right? It's like,
yes, no,
not at all. Like I'm doing this, I'm here. Or, So I don't know. That's the thing. I'm definitely connecting on a lot of the stuff that you've touched on. So we'll definitely be continuing this conversation outside of this. But
yes,
I want to move into a bit of sort of this current exhibition, Hotel Indigo, in Baltimore. So let's talk about it a bit. So what was or what are sort of the key themes that are there? What are the details that, you know, because it's on view until May, right?
Yes.
So give us the details. We need folks to pull up.
I do hope. I mean, you know, I'm always like most artists, horrible at self-promotion, right? You know, but yeah, literally, these are figurative work that at one point I thought I would never do. You know, I thought that obviously since Black figures are in vogue, It seemed to be in vogue now for a while, and I knew it was risky to get myself into that world, and with this high chance of being misunderstood, you know. But eventually I figured, why not? So I did dive into it, and you know, there's a part of me that actually wants to, you know, almost write a disclaimer that these images or these works should not be taken as any sort of like, you know, racial outcry or something like this. You know, they should be truly just be enjoyed, you know, for just what the work is about. You know, it's like you look at it, you try to, you know, you figure out who's the figure. You know, they're missing features, sort of like how you would also, you know, miss certain features being in LA, right? You know, because you seem to not have, what's considered, a Baltimorean, a stereotypical, lingo or sense of self, right? So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we cannot code switch in certain, aspect of our lives, because, I mean, the way we talk to our parents or our grandparents, our friends, it's all sort of different, right? So, and I think that's what happens with a lot of these work. You look at them, depending on the time you look at them, they do different things. At times, they're very clear. You definitely get you get to see these images, and see what they're truly about. There are times when you do not see them at all, and it's sort of like how we are, how we sort of present ourselves. There are times when we do come out, and maybe the aspect of Baltimore that would just sort of reveal itself for whatever reason. And same thing happens to me. There are some times when I go, dude, I left Nigeria when I was 16. I was out of high school. We were, at least I was talking about how I got computer, like the first person to get a, have my have his parents, get him a, because we used to play, what was it, the video game, is it Atari, and all these things. But I told my dad, dude, get me a computer. So I had a CPU in my living room, and the whole neighborhood kids would come to my living room and sort of play something differently, So it's that sort of thing, It's like, here's this kid, who's very Nigerian also. I think people forget that part. I even as a kid growing up, my English was so bad. I spoke pidgin English, which I still speak, which I speak with my family, actually. That's the lingo. Unfortunately, we don't necessarily speak the native language properly, but pidgin English is something we all speak just as a first language, So from that to resisting the urge to want to prove that to anybody, right? Because I think there's a tendency for one to prove themselves as to who you really are, and I always resist that. It's, I mean, it's there. It's for, I keep thinking it's for me to live and not necessarily have to put as a show, right? Or having to prove anything. So, and that's been sort of my take on that whole, having to reveal oneself. I don't feel like I have to tell,
As I think with it, sort of, as I'm looking through, because I'm on the website right now,
Yes.
as I look through it, it's just like, the work, great, and it's a conversation, it's an invitation to a conversation. It's like, what are you seeing here? What is missing here? What's the figure that you're getting out of this? Why did you see that? Maybe this other person didn't see it in that way. Like, what are your learned and maybe similar experiences that might really connect, and
Yes.
those things that are a bit more desperate? And I really dig work that does that, that it's just like, or that attempts to do that, that it's just
Yes.
like, all right, what are you taking from this?
Yes.
What would you think about this artist if you had no details other than here's the work?
Yes.
And I think that's the thing. Like, even the way that I approach this, this isn't the end all be all conversation that I'm having with someone. This is an invitation to dive in further, to have this extra connective tissue,
Yes.
about who the person is and what the
Yes,
motivation
yes.
going to the work.
Yes. No, it's actually, I mean, it's such a relief to actually have someone like you who's, again, an American that sort of have the same issue in a weird way. Because I thought it was 100% an immigrant thing, right? And I mean, you've actually given a lot of, hope, and, it's not personal really. It's what happens when you sort of, breaking a mold in a sense, because I don't necessarily think it's such a big deal that, I mean, even folks going to the Royal College, going to Yale and all these places like that looks like we do. And I've always resisted making that a big deal, especially coming from where I've come from, where, I'm fortunate enough to grow up in an environment where, race was not necessarily a heavy topic, because it's one massive, same people, you know, and to be able to leave that and come here and have to fight, you know, the intrusion of, oh, you're in a new land, and this is what's been preached to you, right? So there's just a lot of, and I'm being vague here, you know, for obvious reasons, you know, and I think that's been a battle, to be honest, and I think that part of the conversation is truly authentic, which is I truly cannot tell you openly, you know, because there's this push and pull.
Sure.
Thing that I feel like for wanting to reveal myself and not wanting to reveal myself, of like, you know, who exactly is he, you know, because I've been in shows that I've touched on, like, you know, the motherland, and where I've been, you know, sort of placed on the sideline, right? And I'm going and I'm looking at everyone who's placed in the center and go, dude, you haven't been, you are not from that part of, you are not from that, you are not from, I am from that part of, you know, but somehow,
that's me.
You know what I mean? You know, and somehow I'm being pushed to the side because I'm not saying much, or because I don't, you know, because I'm resisting wanting to having to quote unquote represent.
I have a buddy, a good friend, actually, I met through this pod, and he's like, I'm 6'4" for context. He's another large black man. He's Jamaican and Congolese.
Yes. Oh, no way.
And me and him are talking. He says, he shows me the message. Like, he got it rejected from this gallery. And they were like, yeah, we just don't know if your work is black enough. He's like, I'm Jamaican and Congolese.
It does not, you know what I mean? And it's that sort of thing. And it could drive you nuts. You know, and
your
sadly,
identity.
You know, the reinforcement, like I was saying, was you know, because it took me a while to realize, you know, maybe Yale did have a point, because like I said, the unbelonging series, you know, of Nigeria and the Bronx really caught people's attention, right? You know, and I go, because the word Nigeria is there and it's like this foreign land and people don't seem to know much about it. And also, I did realize that Yale sort of, you know, made an artist that's off, you know, from Nigeria, you know, and it's like, yes, you're someone who's quote unquote embracing who, you know, that part of who they are, you know, and it's sort of like that would be a lot more acceptable if you have the guts, quote unquote, because it would be labeled guts to just like, hey, fully express that side of who one is, you know. But, you know, for me, I've been in America almost equally now, you know, over 16 years, you know, of being here, and, you know, like, you know, even it's even more than the, you know, my formative years in Nigeria, you know, and you know, so at this point in my life, it's almost like I cannot deny this existence here, you know. So, you know, it's like your friend, and here we go, geez, you know, you know, I guess I would turn that feeling into, and make that the subject matter of what I do, make that the subject matter. Because again, I think something I tend to do well is taking adversity and using it as a means to, you know, to overcome.
Those late 30s, that the pettiness starts to come out, where like there's times where I'm like right now, as we're recording this, there's a billboard that's in Station North, and it may be a petty motivation behind it that I put a billboard up with this, you know, my logo,
yes,
right, Arts District, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I, you know, that press isn't there. I just do it myself, and that's sort of the thinking that's there, and it's not really for me, which to me it's a purity to it. It's not for me to get myself over, to use the wrestling parlance. It's really to get over this sort of arc of interviews for folks to check in and kind of get that invitation, be aware of that invitation to check out this artist, check out you, check out these different things that are there. You know, what I have is just a repository or an archive of those interviews. But part of it is identifying, like, okay, I don't get press from these different outlets. I've had some weird conversations in the background from some of these different outlets.
Yes.
And I'm like, I'd rather not engage in them because, like I said, I'm being a recluse.
Yes.
My billboard's going to be up, though. And maybe folks check it out. Maybe they won't. But at least the intent is there.
Yes.
Sort of, I, you know, when the ball was in my court, as it were.
Yes.
I did this.
I did exactly. I think that's what it sort of come down to. And I think that's the realization actually, is that what did you do when the ball was handed to you, right? So with that being said, I've part of me have sort of embraced the in-between, right? It's become my superpower actually. In a way, you know, it's like there's a ton of artists getting recognition for taking a complete stand as to their background and things like this. And then you've got the in-betweens, right? You know, and I know for a fact that it's not just me feeling this way. So there's a ton of people feeling this way. Mm-hmm. You know, even when I did the show with the Bronx Documentary Center called On Belonging, remember folks come up to me like, oh my God, I felt this some exact way. Anyway, not necessarily, you know, African immigrants or something like this. You know, these are just immigrants in general, you know. So with that said, it's become the subjects of what I do, of the work. You know, you look at them and you often wonder, even with the photographs, there's all this like moving of places and who's behind the camera, you know, like here intimate moments and you're wondering like who's truly behind the camera, you know. And that play, I've always loved to sort of be in spaces that you don't expect or wouldn't expect to see me actually, or spaces where you often wonder who's truly there, you know. So yeah,
that's good. And so I want to move into sort of the last portion of the pod, because, you know, like I said earlier, I gave you the precursor earlier. I've been teasing it, the duration of this conversation, for these rapid fire questions. And I've been adding. So, you know, when we started, you had two. You now got five. So,
yeah.
And as I tell people all the time, do not overthink these. Whatever is that sort of first, you know, answer that comes to your mind, that's the answer we're rolling with.
Okay.
Right. So if you're ready to rock and ready to roll on this one, let's see. So you have Lagos, right?
Yes.
You got the Bronx, you have Baltimore.
Yes.
Which city's energy, the sort of spirit there, resonates most with you as a creative, as an artist?
So to be honest, London did affect me a whole lot. Yeah. And we didn't even mention London because for the first time, I mean, it's, you know, actually my whole experience in London, which I sort of skipped, it was weird, you know. I was able to speak in French. I was able to meet a child friend there and reconnect with him. And a lot of things I was seeing just looked familiar, you know. So it did affect me a lot, you know. I don't know if it's positively, you know. So even with that being said, outside of the UK or Europe, it's New York City, you know. You know, New York City. Baltimore for me, it's sort of this place where I could concentrate.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really not bothered. You know, I could really reflect here, you know, and you know, because I was initially when I moved here, I thought it would really inspire me to actually just do a lot of work, but I was able to produce a lot here. There's no denying that, you know. I mean, with some of the shows I've had, we go, geez, you've just been super productive, you know. But as far as the city itself inspiring what I do, you could sort of, you know, you could see the city in, you know, in my work through the colors. You know, I find I'm using these dark purples and like, you know, I'm hoping this has nothing to do with the Ravens or anything like this.
Well, funny question. That leads me to the next one I have for you. If you could only use one color, let's say you got like your next body of work, but you have to use one color, maybe it's a derivative of that color, but literally you're staying within that realm, what would that color be?
I mean, yellow ochre, for sure. You know, I'm sort of going back into that color. It's just, to me, it's just beautiful. You know, I mean, with the purple, with the deep purples and, you know, violets and indigos and, you know, they're very difficult to use, actually, you know. And if you're not careful, I remember folks should make comments in my studio like, geez, what are this awful. You know, you see, if you see it on anything else but the paintings, you know, or the canvases, you go, you know, it's really, but I've basked in them for so long that I'm sort of able to make them look decent. Yeah, because I still can't even claim that, you know, these colors are like totally beautiful. You know, it's like this is darkness. So, you know, to answer your question, definitely yellow ochre, you know, that's for sure. I mean, my current color palette are very challenging. You know, even I, there's a part of me that's actually repulsed, you know, I find that, I do find them repulsive sometimes, my current color palette, that is. So, yeah.
You're just giving yourself these more challenges. You say your current color palette is challenging. I was like, all right, just giving yourself just a hard time. Like,
yes. Yeah, you know, that's, I mean, that's really what it's about. No, I mean, what's the point if it's not, you know, a challenge? I mean, that's based on my personality too. You know, it's, I mean, why not make it a bit more?
It's one of the things that my partner talks about. She'll say, yeah, you know, when I'm looking at someone's work, she's really into actors.
Yes. And
she's like, degree of difficulty. Like, were you doing work here, or was it something that, okay, cool, you did a really good job at the thing that you're good at doing, versus like, oh, you are sweating in this scene. You're doing this. You're emoting. You had to dance for this. She's like, okay, give them the award. You got that. His accolades. And that's sort of the thing that I even, you know, apply that in doing this, where, you know, I'm a failed artist. I wanted to be a comic book artist when I was a kid, you know, trying to go in that illustration lane. And I do this, I do audio and all of that
yes.
stuff. And I'm able to have a guest coaching conversation
yes.
with a multitude of different artists.
Yes.
That's not easy.
Yes.
So it's a completely different bunch of work.
Yes. Huh? You know. No, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, no, 100%. You are in a completely different line, but it's also admirable, actually. When you know, when people hear that, there's a part of them that go, "Oh, wow." I mean, if it doesn't necessarily work out one way, there are other ways, right? So, not beat yourself up about it, and just find something else. You know,
it's kind of what you were describing. It's like
you
had these different, and it was that for me. I was a marketing person, and I got you know, part of one of those casualties of a reorganization in the job I had. And it was a complete shift in dark periods. I had the wild apartment, nothing on the walls, white walls. And I was like, yeah, I guess I'll do this podcast. And my friends would come by like, how do you turn on this energy, but then your walls look depressing? I was like, I don't know. This is the lane I do this. But
yes. No, it's, yeah, I guess I can see the pattern now. It's like during those dark times, I hate to say it, sadly, that's when one truly becomes, you know, fearless, right? Because I mean, what else is there to fear, right?
Right.
When your back is to the wall, so you know, it does bring forth sort of energy that's needed to just propel one to the next.
And that is the thing. It's yes. it's absolutely energy. That's a big piece of it. And you know, as I've gotten older and having this, not getting caught or hooked on those things that used to be, man, this is a blocky, I'm done, I don't know. And just being able to kind of get past those, it's like the martial arts master. It's like, all right,
yes.
on his head, I can block that kick now.
Yes.
I'm a lot better at it. So you mentioned video games earlier. What's a game from your childhood that you were like, this is my joint, I like this one?
Like Crash Bandicoot, I think that was called.
Oh, Crash Bandicoot, hell yeah.
Yeah. So that was sort of my game. Also the Street Fighters, you know, I was quite good at those. All the Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, the classics, you know.
Hold on. Who's your Mortal Kombat character? And the reason I ask this, I have a Mortal Kombat tattoo. I mean, I'm sorry, a Street Fighter tattoo.
No so, way.
Yeah, who did you roll with? Who was your character?
It's funny, for Street Fighter, it's always been Ryu or something like this. Not even Ken. No. Sorry. I think it's actually, I may break your heart with this one. I think it's the reverse, actually. I think it's Ken was my dude.
Okay.
Weird enough. You know, because, yeah, I was just, it was just, I mean, my Hadoukens and my, you know, I just, and my, you know, my uppercut suit was
your
just.
Tiger uppercut.
Yeah. And Sagat.
Oh,
weirdly.
of Sagat with the wild knees?
With the wild, exactly.
I have a Shadowloo tattoo, so M. Bison was my guy. Bison, because I'm a villain at the end
of the day. Exactly. Fair enough. I own makes it. Sense. No, it's funny you say that because Bison, I remember with the shadow kicks, and he's usually the villain and having to block all that. Gaming was, it's funny because I don't play game at all now all. I think since I moved to America, I just sort of, threw all that away. Even sports, right? I don't watch any sport really. I could enjoy a game, but I don't root for any team. I could just sort of, and by sport, I just mean soccer. That's it.
I was waiting for you.
Basketball, I sort of know what that's about. I don't have a team. American football, I have no idea what that's about.
They're going to have to get you a starter kit with the wild, like, Orioles hat. It's going to show up in your work. You're going to have, Davis jersey. Look, I'm going to give you a care package.
I bet.
Now, what are you doing?
I bet. No. I mean, isn't the Oriole, isn't that stadium one of the best in the country, I've heard?
Yeah, in a history in the past, I worked there when I was an undergrad. I worked for the Orioles when I was an undergrad. So, it's a place that's very near and dear to my heart. And and for the majority of my life, the last time they won a championship was 2 years before I was born. So, I will be 40 next year. So, it's just like you guys have been losers my life. So it's a challenge to root for.
Yeah,
but they're my guys, and they're it's Baltimore. It's Baltimore's team.
It is. So I'm guessing you are based in the East Coast. Sorry, in the West.
I'm in Baltimore. I'm in Baltimore.
You're in Baltimore?
Yeah, I'm in East Baltimore. Yeah.
Fair enough. So I'm guessing with the Pacific timing, I couldn't show why that was.
The app is weird sometimes. It's a goofy app. I was just like, hold on, because I thought you were in the West Coast for a second.
No, not at all. No, exactly. Because I remember asking, I go, why? I'm looking at Pacific time. So I'm guessing, okay, he's probably basing, again, even with your presentation, right, the typical. All the things you're forgetting, which is, are you in Los Angeles right now? Because I could certainly see that. That's, in my mind, I go, okay, great. He's coming. He's tuning in from LA, and I'm in the East Coast. So I had no idea. We were both just like, yeah.
So here's the last two I got for you.
Sure.
You said you're a hip hop head. So
yes.
What's a song that's currently on your playlist?
So what a timing. So I've been listening to Rock Marciano, his current album.
Okay.
So I think is it Marcicology or something like that? Marciology or something like this.
The fact that you threw out Rock Marciano says a lie, because someone's like, yeah, I was listening to some old school. It's like, no, brought an obscure reference. I love it.
Exactly. No, there you go. No, yeah. It's funny. I actually made a post about that and how truly, my discovery of that dude, not to like have this conversation go into Rock Marciano, it was, no one put me onto this dude. I'm a huge rap head, by the way. I remember discovering him and I go, who is this guy? This is off his first album, just dropping on the internet. No views, no comments. And I'm listening to this dude and I go, this is 2010. This is insane. And it's mind-blowing because he was there when I was in London. He dropped an album. Was it Behold a Dark Horse or something like this? And that album just literally saved me in London. It was dark. It was exactly how I saw things in a weird way. And, my point is, from this obscure, rap on the internet to like him being who he is now. So again, it's that sort of thing, like having the foresight to realize that this is good and I'm sticking with it. I don't know. I don't care what anyone says. And again, it's still that rebel mentality where I sort of look for things and, find value in them and just sort of stay with them. So Rock Marciano at the moment. Tapeworm, I think, to be specific, that would be the name of the track that's on my playlist right now in my head.
Okay.
In my head, rather.
So this is the last one. I'm always super curious. We've gotten to know each other this time. Yeah. I'm very curious about, what folks eat what their eating habits are. They're, you know, you artist types. It's like, man, I had a half a clementine and some pistachios earlier. It's like, that's not a meal. What is your go-to meal? Like, you've had, like, you know, sort of a busy week or what have you, and you need something. You need something that's like, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be healthy. It just has to be good. What is that thing that you're like craving?
I mean, rice is, you know, all sort of rice, jollof rice, you know, which I make, white rice, you know, with stew or something like this. Just rice is a go-to. It's almost like, I think rice is the go-to for lots of people in other parts of the world. In America, it doesn't seem that way. You know, for me, it's, yeah, wherever I could get it, you know, just, you know, rice, yeah.
I mean, look.
I mean, I'm wrong. I'm not saying I do not have, you know, I do not eat, you know, horribly, you know. You know, I'm not saying any of this at all. You know, but I do like rice. It's very comforting to me, you know. It's my go-to, and that's been true.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, I always remark on this movie, this documentary, I guess a docu-film, I guess, Euro Dreams of Sushi, and that whole, like, process of making sushi, the art in it. And one of the things that stuck out, I might be misremembering because it's been a while since I've seen it, but he was expressing the importance of properly making rice. And obviously for, like, sushi.
Yes.
Like, you're right. It's like, it's going to take you 50 years to know how to make this rice.
I was
like,
yes.
I run that back. And, you know, for me, there's two things I don't know how to do well. I try to cook pretty regularly. I don't know how to fry food, and I don't know how to cook rice well. I have a rice cooker that I botch. I fail at it. So
hold on. You still, I mean, even with the rice cooker, you still somewhat mess it up?
I don't.
It's just water in it. That's it. Maybe a bit of salt. That's about it. And push a button.
I know. I'm just understanding the air fryer. Let me live.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, air fryer, I mean, I'm not going to lie. That's a bit complicated to me, you know, so I'm not even going to, like, you know, try to act like I'm a real proper cook. Air fryer, I wouldn't even touch. I don't know what I would do with that. Do you make weapons with that? Then is that a weapon?
I just got it, and I do some interesting things in it, but the friggin' the rice cooker, I think the issue is I either put too much rice in there or I don't put enough water. The balance, the ratio's off.
The ratio, yes. I could see that being I've had guests who've sort of made that same mistake. Fair enough. It's not the end of the world. It's just a matter of kind of balance out the water, you know, with time.
I'm gonna perfect it eventually.
Yeah, perfect it. Just, you know, that's all.
It's like, I have it. And it's like, what are you doing? How is this? How did you screw this up again? That's literally what I think every time.
That's funny, because actually I do have a rice cooker, but I'm also an expert at making just, you know, boiling myself. So yeah, I
can either, yeah. I like it. Just show me up again. I like it. I dig it. Good job there.
Yeah, right.
So with that, one, you know, that's sort of the wrap up of the questions. You got off the hot seat, you got off the rapid fire portion.
Cool.
And thank you for being a part of this pod. This has been, it's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. It's been a lot of fun. And there's two things I want to do. And again, thank you is one of them.
No, you're welcome. No, thank you. You know, I don't know how these things work, to be honest, because like I was telling you, I almost don't do interviews. You know, I've done a few, you know, words, but not necessarily podcasts, you know, and usually I wouldn't say much, you know, I would just let, you know, it's funny, I'll just let people just make up things, and I sometimes just, you know, and not really have things be definite, you know. It's like, just have it become this sort of like rumor. Oh, he's the American. Oh, you know, he's British, actually. He's British.
Oh, I love it.
And he's this, and there's just a bunch of things just out there, and I do get a kick out of it sometimes, but
I want to, that was like actually a question that I had for a while. It was like, I would ask folks in the rapid fire portion, because you get to see how cheeky you can be.
Yeah. And
so what's a rumor you want to start? And they're like, look, don't get me started. I have a lot of I want to put out there. But in these final moments, I want to give you the space and opportunity. I know you said you're not good at it, but, you know, sort of shameless plug, you know, tell folks where to, like, check you out, social media, website, stuff like that, just so I can be up to date.
No, fair enough. I mean, there's nothing to really to see on my social media, to be honest. The things I do on my social media, sometimes actually get you off it, you know. It's, you know, but you could definitely see the work. I do maintain a website. So you get to see the work on my website with no interference at all. You know, you've got all the time to look at them and critique them. You know, I don't like when I put them on social media because you're looking at who's liked it or who hasn't liked it. And sort of interfere on how one receives, you know, work. You know, so for that reason, I sort of refrain, or even the quality, you know, very lazy on social media. You know, it's a lot of times I'm making photographs with my phone, which is terrible. So my website is definitely a way to go. With the show that's Amy curated at the Indigo Hotel, it's there. I think it would be great if folks could go and just check it out, you know, just see it in person, you know. And that's really about it. Yeah, and thank you for having me. You know, this is incredible. You know, I wasn't sure what to expect. I remember listening to a few podcasts, and I go, in my mind, I kept thinking, will I fit in here? How is this going to be? But there's something I just say, just, you know, that said to me, you know, stick with it. And then I saw your list of questions, and I go, yes. it's you really did a great job looking, and your questions were very, very interesting. And I was just like, yes, so glad, you know, we were able to, you know, connect. You know, I really appreciate you having me on.
And there you have it, folks. I'm going to again thank Osaritin Ugiabe for coming on and telling us a bit about his work, but more about his journey. And I'm Rob Lee, saying that there's art, culture, and community in and around your neck of the woods. You've just got to look for it. Oh,